Welcome back to the Content That Grows podcast. I'm your host, Nate Turner. Today, we're going to be talking about SMB versus mid-market and enterprise and how the content strategy differs. To do so, I'm being joined by Ben Goldstein. Ben is a veteran content marketing leader who serves as the director of content marketing for Vitally, a customer success platform for B2B companies. After an early career in the magazine industry and online media, Ben transitioned to content marketing in 2015, directing content strategy for Credibly and Nutshell. And then as Nutshell's VP of marketing, Ben helped lead the company to successful acquisition by WebFX in 2022. So with that, glad to have you here, Ben. How's it going?
Thank you so much, Nate. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. So this is a really great topic, and I'm excited to kind of get into all the details of it. But before we get into as much of the SMB versus mid-market enterprise, I also want to just kind of pull on the thread you mentioned, and I kind of just read through, like, you did content marketing, moved into a VP of marketing role, and are actually now back into a director of content marketing role. So can you just talk about, like, that decision to move back into that content leadership role and just how's it going?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the context is about 3 years ago, I earned my first ever VP of marketing title. And at the time, of course, that was incredibly gratifying. And I still think of it as, you know, one of my biggest professional accomplishments. You know, I was working for Nutshell, which is a small business CRM. I had already been working there for about 5 years, leading their content program, and sort of building that up into kind of a successful force of revenue and leads. And, you know, as always happens, especially among small companies, when you have a good amount of success as an IC or a manager, you know, you eventually get handed the keys to the entire operation. That's basically what happened. And a hugely just like valuable learning experience, but it was a bit of a transition. And I found myself like in a lot of meetings where I had to think about things that weren't as interesting or kind of like inspiring to me, but, you know, performance marketing and PPC and affiliate relationships. And to adapt a phrase from one of my friends, Elaine Ezekiel, like gumball machine marketing, anything where you're sort of putting money in and you turn the crank and hopefully you get something of value. That stuff just doesn't fire me up. I was looking at spreadsheets too much. I'm a creator at heart. Like long before my marketing career, as you sort of mentioned up front, I had a career in journalism, online media and magazines and things like that. And that's the part of marketing that I like, which is creating things that an audience is really going to get inspired by and enjoy,
right?
And hopefully convince them to take an action. But like that's what fires me up. So the good news is that at Nutshell we had enough of a sort of growth momentum going that we were in a good place to be acquired by a larger company. Everybody who had stock options got a nice check at the end of the day, including myself. And that gave me the privilege to walk away as soon as I started like dreading going to work. You know, the Sunday scaries became the Tuesday scaries, essentially. And I was like, you know what? I don't have to do this anymore. I'm going to leave and kind of reassess. So I started doing a little bit of consulting work in the content space and sort of came to the realization that, you know, content leadership is my infinite game. It's my vocation. You know, I think it's where I could be of most service to an organization. It's just like turning content into force for brand development and pipeline generation and all that good stuff. So, you know, eventually I started looking for new roles, found this great one at Vitally, and that's where I've been for the past almost a year now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I have a tremendous amount of respect, you know, when people take the time to just like understand what makes them passionate and not feel like, well, this is what I have to do so that I can become a senior VP of marketing, so that I can become a CMO, you know, and like just recognizing what does interest you and your passion, and everything. I think
it's also hard. It's hard to have the discipline to say, I don't need that extra title and all that extra money. You know, even when it was first offered to me, I felt like, I don't know if this is right for me, but obviously I'm going to say yes. You'd be a fool not to, right?
Right.
But you know, I think those are the decisions we have to make. Everybody wants to advance in their career. And sometimes just like, yeah, it's the bigger title, right? That's career advancement, but you know, not necessarily sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it not in the same way, but so after Sprout, I consulted for a bit and I loved it. And I loved the companies I got to work with, but I found myself, like, I started to realize about myself that I like building things, you know, building and scaling. And so at first being, you know, self-employed, it was awesome because I set up my website, set up my business. It was building. And then it kind of just like leveled out, and there's only so much you can scale. I didn't really have a passion to build courses and, you know, all kinds of like stuff in that realm. And so that's, you know, one factor that sort of led to ultimately starting 10 Speed was just, you know, opportunity, seeing opportunity in consulting and the people that are needing help. And there's a lot of opportunities for us to do great work for people. And then also now kind of getting a chance to build a company and scale things up.
It aligns with things you actually want to spend your time doing, which is the important thing.
Yeah. Which makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's great. And so as part of this process of you, ultimately moving to Vitaly, like you mentioned, Nutshell was SMB, Credibly was SMB. So, you know, early part of your career, content marketing, SMB focused, and then you went to Vitaly, which is targeting more mid-market enterprise. So I guess just tell us about that, you know, in the realm of content marketing, kind of just making that move and just what that's been like kind of going from SMB to the mid-market enterprise.
Yeah. I mean, that took a bit of a transition at first as well, because, you know, Nutshell, we were selling a $40 a month CRM, you know, we were offering a free trial as like the primary CTA, all the sort of like self-service traditional digital marketing tricks were still working. SEO blog, you know, the blog was very powerful as a lead generator, and not just even for like the mid funnel, like, you know, best Salesforce alternatives, best, you know, CRM for XYZ, like even our like top funnel stuff, like glossary posts would generate leads. And I think it's because we're asking very little of the person who's visiting the page. Like, just give us your email address. You can play around with the product. We don't need your credit card information. A sales rep is not necessarily going to be hounding you every day. So, you know, get into Vitaly where the, you know, average sale price is like 25 grand. It's the primary CTA for most of our blog pages or website pages in general is more like start a demo or request a demo. So, you know, talk to a sales rep. And when I arrived, one of the first opportunities I noticed, which, you know, turned out to be kind of dubious in retrospect, but I was like, we don't have a formal SEO program. We're not trying to target those traditional mid-funnel keywords and phrases that you would expect, competitive phrases and, you know, best CSPs for XYZ. So I immediately started to work like building out an SEO program and was sort of disappointed with your early results. We're getting the traffic. They just weren't converting as well as like I had been, you know, accustomed to in my, you know, previous SMB career. And of course, like, you know, it makes sense in retrospect, like we're asking you to request a demo. Yeah. I don't want to talk to someone. It's a bigger ask. And especially like, you know, like a lot of products in our space, we do custom pricing. So there's not just like a pricing page that just shows you exactly how much you're going to pay. We want to talk to you and hear what you're trying to accomplish exactly. Then we'll build a package for you. Yeah. So like the sort of traditional, you know, old school content marketing tricks to generate sales leads weren't as effective. So I had to start getting a little more creative with, well, a couple things like what's going to actually influence people and how should we be distributing content in the first place? Like, hey, Google's a tough sell for everybody these days. You know, SERPs are changing in a way that Google's just becoming a worse and worse distribution channel. How else can we get our content in the hands of the right people? And also, I've just become convinced that as you go up market, it's less about convincing the end user that we have the most intuitive, you know, feature-rich tool. It becomes more about convincing the boss that like you're a legitimate brand to partner with and getting in their ear and having their peers talk about you. So that really changed my opinion on like what to focus on.
Yeah. No, I think you hit on a couple really good points. One is that buying behavior and, you know, requesting the demo, requesting pricing, like a lot of times that's happening pretty far along in their decision-making. Like they've narrowed it down to you and two others that they're now going to request a demo and go through the process. And it's, so you're not getting those quick conversions and leads, like on the SMB side, but they're, you know, the content is still educating and, you know, getting you to that point of the demo request. It's just very different. And then the other, I think I feel like as I got later in my career at Sprout and we got bigger and our systems got bigger, like on my marketing ops responsibilities, it was like, get on a call and it's like, okay, well, first of all, let's talk about your integration. Like, is this a, you know, a bi-directional like native integration, or is this just like a, like that's square one. We're not even going to talk about any other features if you don't integrate the way we need you to integrate. Yep. And to your point, like it wasn't about ease of use, end user, and some of those things, just the bigger company just needs something. And obviously you get into enterprise and you're into, you know, SOC 2 compliance and mm-hmm. single sign-ons and all kinds of other stuff that, that certainly complicates it. So anything else, you touched on a couple of good things already, but, like anything else you'd call out on like the differences in the strategy, between SMB and like some of the stuff you're doing now with Vitally?
Yeah. I mean, one thing we've really leaned into is like community and expert driven content. So, you know, we started something called a success network, Vitally Success Network, which is our community content hub, where we're inviting as many brilliant, forward thinking customer success thought leaders as we can into this private group that of folks who are creating content for us and contributing to content. And it's important because these are the folks we want to align with. Like these are the executives that our buyers might already know and trust, and they've seen on LinkedIn posting all the time. And we want to sort of, get these folks out there creating for Vitally. Like that's going to have a great network effect in itself. And it's also, you know, like it kind of defines who you want to attract. If we're aligning mm-hmm. with a very specific kind of executive, a VP of CS, a CCO at a mid-market or an enterprise company, a reader or a viewer of our content might think, you know, I either relate to this person or I aspire to be like this person. And this is who Vitally is aligning with. So it's almost like we're establishing who the market is through these experts that we're aligning with in terms of content. So alignment with experts is great from a brand kind of influence level. It's great from a distribution channel because we get these folks to share their content on LinkedIn. And we actually recently launched a podcast called Successful, which is hosted by our VP of CS, Taylor Johnston. Again, she's having conversations with executives in and out of the CS department. It's very much about cross collaboration and how to be more effective as a CS leader. The guests are reflective of who we want to align with, the kind of companies we want to attract. We're not trying to mm-hmm. do that sort of like sneaky thing where we're trying to sell to the guests, but hopefully, you know, the right. guests through their own networks and promoting these podcast episodes that they're a part of, will kind of spread the word of like, this is who Vitally is. These are the kind of levels of conversations and innovation that they're aligning with. And we're going to use the networks of our guests as a sort of bullhorn. So yeah. Again, you know, this all comes from this idea of it's about influencing the sort of C-suite of the buyer and how important that is to have it come from the mouths of people that folks already trust, not so much the brand voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll also add, though, that totally different. This is more in terms of like logistics and it's just getting away from that demo request. Not like losing it entirely, but adding lower lift asks and CTAs to a website visitor. Our product marketing team has done a fantastic job of developing interactive tours of our product. Like, yeah, you may not be ready to talk to a sales rep at this point, but like, yeah, give us your email address and you can play in the sandbox on our website and get an experience with wide sections of our product. You can see how that compares to what you're using right now and anything else you might be evaluating at this point. That's such a lower ask and it's more effective for people who are just in that evaluation stage right now. So making sure you're giving folks multiple pathways to convert in different ways when they show up to your website is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. And we've done, I think, two different episodes on kind of tying content strategy with interactive demos and some of the power there. And so, that's a great call out. And I think... I think the exact point, you know, of like, you got to try to not just be like, hopefully they're, you know, we're going to keep these out there. Hopefully they're reading it. Hopefully it's working. Hopefully they're going to request a demo, like get these earlier steps, the lower friction points to kind of get them along and see it. So that's great. One question is that some of the stuff you're doing with podcasts and I, you know, totally agree. I'm glad to hear it's not like that sneaky backdoor thing, but it made me think, is there, in terms of like general go-to-market, is there ABM happening? Like, does Vitaly do ABM? And then this is sort of like kind of tying into that a little bit, or is it, are you doing something different?
In a effort to go up market, ABM has become a little bit of a bigger part of our strategy. We still do, you know, SDR, you know, cold LinkedIn messaging, cold emailing, just try to generate, like that's still a huge part of our business. And you know, we've been able to refine who our target buyer is to the point where it actually is pretty effective. In terms of whether the podcast is a part of it, I would only say in the general sense that we've gotten better at having our content team collaborate with our sales team in terms of distributing very relevant content to sales prospects at the right time. I love having our sales team as one of our best distribution channels, because they know better than anybody what are the problems that a certain prospect can solve, what's going to sort of resonate with them the most. And we're like operationalizing that as much as we can. I think we still have a little way to go, but it's been super effective so far. Just building a better relationship between content and sales to get the right messaging to the right potential buyers.
Yeah, that's really smart. And huge advocate of that. It's definitely one of those things that like we try to tell clients and others and talk about on the podcast, but you know, taking action and actually building that out, like you said, like it's an entire motion to really kind of like get coordination, like make sure they have the right stuff, they know who to send it to and when, like all that. But can be a huge thing. How many sales reps are there that are distributing that for you? Just out of curiosity.
Gosh, 8 to 10, something like that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So it's not like you have to have a sales force of 200 people to have like a pretty good amount of distribution there. So that's great. Any other, I think you kind of hit on a couple already, but anything else in terms of like the challenges of moving from SMB to there? You've hit on the lead side of it and a couple others, but anything else you want to hit on there?
Yeah. I just think like the overarching challenge is like when you're talking about this sort of community building and influence, like a lot of that's just harder to track from like a dollars and cents perspective. I don't think anybody is anybody who tells you they've like nailed content measurement in terms of like, you know, creation to revenue is probably lying to you. But there is like, you can track like, hey, you know, conversions from certain pages and things like that. And you can kind of estimate how much certain content efforts are worth to you. When you're talking about events or community efforts that are more like long tail and it's about sort of long-term influence, it's hard to put that on the spreadsheet sometimes, which makes me nervous because of course I want to prove the ROI of myself and my team and our entire organization. But it involves a little more trust that if we can drive these sort of leading indicators of audience growth and traffic growth and content engagement, you know, maybe there might be some opaqueness in that sort of, okay, what comes next? But if we are, if the entire boat is rising and we can tie certain efforts to certain wins, you have to call it a success and you have to sort of like allow for a bit of mystery. It's tough because I would love to tell you the exact value of a podcast episode, but you never can. Right. And you just have to accept that you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And it's, I think that, yes, if someone says they've got it dialed in, then they're lying or ignorant of what they're missing. But I think the other side is if you do try to get too granular in that and like really try to prove everything, the value of every single thing, it just doesn't look good. And then you're like backpedaling being, well, wait, it's not all about like just this, like there's, you know, brand awareness being built and like there people are trusting us more. And like, and then it's like, you kind of like pulled yourself in the wrong direction and then you're trying to backpedal and help people see the bigger picture on it. And I agree that
any marketing leader needs to explain or convey the sense that they're for more than just like generating leads. It's more than just the gumball machine. You know, it's this wide range of influence that you could have with all your efforts and relationships. So, and some executives are more amenable to that message than others. But if you're only judged by dollars in and dollars out, it's not an environment that's conducive to effective work as a content leader.
Yeah, exactly. And the irony is that the more a CEO or a leader tries to force that dollar in, dollar out mentality, the worse the performance and success of the content program is.
Typically. That's right. So
I guess, what are some of the advantages, and maybe you've already hit on this too. I think we've kind of done a good job of touching many pieces along the way, but like some of the advantages that you feel you have working in like mid-market to enterprise space compared to when you were in SMB.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is bias for action. I mean, of just coming from smaller companies where you have to do a lot and there's not as many levels of approval, you know, you have both a leeway to move quickly and kind of like a warrant that you kind of have to move quickly because your competitors are 2 and 5 and 10 times your size. So I've gotten very used to getting done, but making it good, to quote my friend Rebecca Kuhn. And that's helpful. That kind of helps you stand up when you kind of move up to like a large organization. And the other thing too, is like the other element that you have more leeway with as a smaller company is like leeway of personality and brand tone and things like that. Any mid-market company, speak in generalities, but like most mid-market companies have ambitions of going enterprise and upmarket. So they already start kind of like, let's reel in, they become a little risk averse. And we don't want to say anything that steps out of line in terms of our messaging and things like that. So, I came in with a sort of portfolio of high personality work from previous jobs. I've been able to sort of push the edges of the envelope in terms of like, well, let's have a little fun here. And what can we say that's a little more human? And let's speak more in first person. And let's use clever turns of phrase here. And let's try to catch every piece of jargon we can and kill it. I think that comes from like SMB experience, and it is helpful just to kind of having a leavening force in a mid-market to enterprise organization.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, you probably have more superpowers even than you realize and stuff. I know, I feel like I really don't talk about, I try not to talk about my experience at Sprout too much, brought it up a couple times already today, but, we started out entirely SMB and then moved up market to mid market and then enterprise. And one of the things that we found was just everything we did from like the product standpoint and marketing and sales was very, very different than, Sprinklr and at the time it was called Spreadfast, like the enterprise only solutions. Mm-hmm. It felt like we had some really big advantages in the way that we moved and worked. And you know, like you said, bias for action, I think was very true, but even just in an enterprise sale, be able to say, hey, look, this is not a mystery and there's not a 3-month implementation. You can see the product right now. Like you could do a pilot if you'd like and really prove it out. And that's not something that they, at least at that time, could do. And so there was just like some agility and things like that. And so I'm sure that there's a lot of other stuff that you've brought from the SMB experience into this and helps a lot.
I hope so.
Yeah. Would you go back to SMB again in the future if you had the opportunity, or do you kind of like this too much?
That's a good question. I am open to whatever the universe puts in front of my path at this point. As I think I said, like near the top of the call, like I plan to be a content leader for the rest of my professional career, unless something wild happens. But I know the parameters and the rules and the environments are going to change along the way. It could be SMB again. It could be way up market. It could be B2C. I don't know. Whatever opportunity, you know, comes my way where I think I could be genuinely of use, I would absolutely pursue it. So I'm certainly not stuck in any sort of like market segment. I don't think of myself that way, or any industry segment.
Yeah.
Even though I've been doing like B2B software for a long time, I'm not married to it.
Yeah. Well, even that, I think it's interesting. I don't have a good analogy for it, but like Yes, B2B SaaS, B2B software, like that is a kind of a market segment, I guess, or like an industry. But like, you know, you did fintech, you did a CRM, you're doing customer success. Like those also just feel extremely different, even though they're all kind of under that umbrella of like software companies selling to businesses. You know, like those are like their own markets and verticals and stuff. So
I'm not going to get into this too deep, but I will say that going from CRM to CSP, the product itself is not very different. We're talking about a pre-sale like mm-hmm. tool and a post-sales tool, but sure. the sort of universal personality philosophy of the user is very different. Like a stereotypical salesperson's personality is very different from a stereotypical CSM's personality. And just like learning a new language was part of the sort of like transition process. But it's like, I think that could be said for a lot of reasons. It's like, are we looking too close at the product, the software tool and what that's like? Whereas I think we need to be looking closer at like the end user and what that person is like, and what's their behavior like, and how do they speak when they're on Slack? Like that's going to tell you more answers than like trying to learn a big feature list and what platform could be used for what scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Anything else you want to cover on the differences in strategy and execution for SMB versus like targeting the mid-market enterprise? Just anything that I left out?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's just, I think the transition is like, we're in this like post Google world. That's the thing that's giving me the most anxiety. That's been like the biggest transition of the last year, is just feeling like this sort of party is over. When it comes to using Google as this, like, hey, you gotta create a content that's better than your competitors, and you're gonna drive traffic, and like, you'll do well in terms of ranking. But if Google is showing the searcher a bunch of things they want to them to click on instead, like, it's gonna be a tough go. So it's interesting that I sort of made this transition at the time I did, because while I'm getting my head around, okay, we're not in the SMB world anymore, we're in mid market to enterprise land. We're also in this sort of like, we need to figure out as content marketers what these distribution channels are going to be, what's going to be effective now, instead of just saying like Google is the strategy. It wasn't true before, and it certainly is not true now. So thinking about, hey, you know, is email still viable? Are live events viable? How can you leverage your CS team and your sales team to distribute? How can you leverage like email signatures, anything you can do to get content out in the world? We need to think harder about that, because, you know, like, not to be all doom and gloom near the end of our discussion here, but like, Google's dead. At least that's how I'm starting to think about it. And we need to start planning for the future.
Yeah. No, it's there's definitely a lot to that. And I think that our approach, you know, really has been like expanding our services, you know, for similar reasons. It's like, you can still rank, you can still, you know, drive traffic, you can build awareness, you can get leads from Google. But like we've said, I probably said it 50 times on this podcast, like Google or any other search engine is a distribution channel. It's not the, like, you can't just depend on that as your only. And so, you know, we've really kind of been branching out and developing the areas that like we keep, you know, telling clients or wanting or hoping clients can do to round out and decrease the dependency on SEO and, you know, on organic search. And so that's really kind of the big area where we're trying to build out and do it for that exact reason. It's like, I think there's still some really good scenarios where you should try to create content and do well for search, but there are a lot that used to be that aren't anymore. They're just, they don't work, or it's too competitive. And so when you kind of have that narrowing list, then you need to be able to, you know, augment that with other things. So I agree with what you're saying.
Let me try to end on a less down note than that. And sort of one other final piece of wisdom for anybody, you sort of like going from the SMB path to the mid-market path, or even upmarket to enterprise. I think it's strange to think about it this way, but going from a sort of market segment where the product costs this much to a product market segment where the product costs this much up here, like it seemed like a very subtle change, but you have to think about it like you're entering a different world. And, you know, the influencers in that space are different and the way people buy are different. They're way different. And you just can't take it lightly. And what I found super helpful is finding a couple of guides in the space, guides in the CS world, guides in the mid-market world, to introduce me to the right people, to tell me like, who are the players? Who are the influencers? My friend, Kristen Gray, Psychus of Bonsai, I consider her one of these guides in my world as I've sort of made this transition. It's been extremely helpful. But like a connector, you know, find connectors in that space that you're going into to help you like find that footing and get in front of the right people. And, you know, if there's any advice there, it's like when you landed that new role in that, you know, first 60 days, you know, take your head out of those planning documents and like talk to as many people in the industry and the market segment as you can. You will not regret it. That is going to be more impactful than anything else you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree. I think that's smart. And really, when you kind of think about those level, as you mentioned, $40 a month or so, you know, nutshell. So that's a little under $500 a year. That's a big jump to 25,000.
Yeah.
You could go to, you know, 250,000. There are, you know, plenty of enterprise products that are 250 a year, and then you can certainly get into seven figures. And I think these step level changes in that amount are hugely different. And then, yeah, just the different space as well. So I think that's really smart to not try to just forge that path on your own, but like you said, find the connectors, find the people who can kind of tell you, talk to this person, not to this person. And, yeah. And I think, you know, everybody's so eager to just like jump in, start doing. It's like, you know, from the time you're interviewing to you get the job, you like have all these ideas and by the time you start, you're ready to just jump in and do it. And I think it's a good sign of maturity to not jump right into executing and then really take some time to learn and acclimate.
Wait till your feet are under you first and you actually understand the battlefield before you, you know, raise your weapon, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, this has been great. I love the conversation. I love just really needling in and calling out the differences and, you know, the good and the bad with, you know, approaching content strategy for SMB versus larger companies. So, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Check out any previous episodes at 10speed.io/podcast. Like and subscribe on your platform of choice. And with that, I think we're all set. Thanks so much, Ben.
Thanks so much, Nate. It was a pleasure.